Islamic Republic. If they have the chance, they will do anything they can. This is the state of affairs concerning confrontation and the encounter between the Islamic Republic and the US. Some people distort history when writing it.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done
good morning to all our listeners. You are tuning to Iran radio broadcast from Tehran. Nice to have you with us. Here are some interesting facts about the Holy Quran. Surah Yasin is considered the heart of the Quran for its tremendous benefits for the believer. The best drink according to Quran is milk. In the Quran, Allah also describes the rivers of milk in heaven. The best food according to Quran is honey, which cures several problems and is the sweetest gift to humans from Allah. Normally, the Quran declares Friday as the most blessed day of the week, and the month of Ramadan is the best month of the year. And the night of Qadr has been described as a night better than 1,000 months. Its significance is described in chapter Al-Qadr. And now we'll listen to the continuation of Iran Radio. We start off this hour's programs with To My Brother. The program examines the universal principles contained in the teachings of Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him, and their importance for contemporary individuals and societies. Next up will be Spotlight. This is our final program this hour. The program covers the most important events happening in the world today with roundtable analysis and discussion.
Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
I would like to take this opportunity to talk about one dimension of the personality of Amir al-Mu'mineen.
As-salamu alayka ya Amin Allah fi
ardi. Peace be upon you, O trusted guardian, appointed by Allah.
The universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother.
Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters. This is To My Brother, and I'm your host, Mehdi. It's great to have all of you here, and today we want to talk about a character who not only influenced Muslims across the world, but influenced many non-Muslims as well. This great personality is the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace and blessings upon him. And as history is a testament, and furthermore both friend and enemy have testified openly, Imam Ali alayhi salam was not tainted with any vices, unlike so many others who surrounded him and opposed him. He had a perfect faith in Allah, and so he acted according to his belief. Imam Ali alayhi salam was a lantern of guidance in his time, where the sunnah of the Holy Prophet had begun to be forgotten. Yet Imam Ali remained steadfast on the path of the pure Muhammadan Islam, like a solid, unshakable fortress in the middle of a great wild storm.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام إذا هبت أمرا فقع فيه فإن شدة توقيه أعظم مما تخاف منه.
Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salam said, "When you are afraid of something, dive straight into it." because the intensity of abstaining from it is greater than what you are afraid of.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is To My Brother, and we're talking about the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. So what an honor it is to be here humbly speaking about the universal persona of His Eminence, the first divinely appointed Imam, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam. So this is probably the last program where we're going to be talking about these really interesting instances from the life of Imam Ali alayhi salam, in which His Eminence was destroying the great idols of the Meccan polytheists. And of course, we are taking, you know, very small, beautiful, interesting lessons from these instances of the life of Imam Ali alayhi salam and trying to connect them to his universal persona as well. So in this instance, we find that this is the more famous instance of Imam Ali alayhi salam destroying idols. So when the Holy Messenger of Allah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi led the conquest of the city of Mecca, which was of course a peaceful conquest because at least 10,000 people had come with His Eminence, and how very different is this from the night migration where His Eminence, the Holy Prophet, had to secretly leave the city of Mecca because they were going to assassinate him. And here we find that years later, he is coming back to the city of Mecca with 10,000 people at least who are supporting him and who are willing to fight for him and defend him. And he ends up peacefully conquering this city. So when this conquest was going to happen in that time frame, there were more than 300 idols that were positioned just on the roof of the Holy Kaaba. And so we find that Imam Ali alayhi salam, he climbed up upon the shoulders of the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings upon him, and he uprooted all of these idols and he threw all of them to the ground, including a major idol by the name of Hubal, which was actually worshipped by Abu Sufyan. So, you know, just to kind of put everything into perspective, whether it is idols that are within ourselves, whether it is idols manifested in the, you know, in the face of arrogant powers, or whether it is, you know, idols such as fame and wealth and status, or whether it is idols in the shape of sports stars or musicians or actors or the different kind of, you know, idols that are put forth for human beings to worship in one way or the other. We have to fight these idols. We have to break these idols. We have to break ourselves from these idols. That is really what is going on, you know. We're not saying go and break, you know, certain actors. No, we have to break our concept of that individual being an idol. When we break that concept of that individual being an idol, we have already broken that idol, metaphorically speaking. So, but the more we worship, quote unquote, that idol within ourselves or outside ourselves, the more we strengthen that idol. But the minute that we stop worshiping that idol, we have broken that idol, at least for ourselves, and then we help others to break that idol. You know, one last thing, of course, even though we've run out of time, destroying Hubal, which was the idol that was worshipped by Abu Sufyan, would incur the wrath and the deadly enmity of Abu Sufyan, and it did. You see that the generations and the children of Abu Sufyan, Muawiyah and Yazid, they had a deadly enmity with the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. But this deadly enmity should never make us fearful of doing what is our duty and our obligation and our responsibility. A very interesting lesson indeed, brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
تمام ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به اسلام، چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به هر دینی،
human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib. This means Ali ibn Abi Talib is a global character who is respected by Sunnis, Shias, and even non-Muslims. Everyone, even the faithless people, respect Imam Ali and his personal values.
وقتی شخصیت امیرالمومنین رو بشناسی در مقابل او خضوع میکند.
At this moment we invite you to listen to parts of the Arabic text of Ziyarat Aminullah along with its English translations. Please stay tuned.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم اللهم فاستجب دعائي واقبل ثنائي واجمع بيني وبين أوليائي بحق
O Allah, give favorable answer to my prayer. Acknowledge the praise I sign in worship. Let there be peace and harmony between me and my friends for the sake of Muhammad, Ali, Fatima, Al-Hassan, and Al-Hussein. Verily, thou art my benefactor who provides with bounties, the aim of my desires, the ultimate destination of my hopes in my future life and during this short life. Thou art my God, my Master, and my Lord. Welcome, my friends. Keep our enemies away from us. To save us from the evil mischief, divert their attention. Let the true world come out in the open, supreme and dominant. Refute and condemn the folly, rendered contemptible. Verily, thou art able to do all things.
إِنَّكَ عَلَى كُلِّ شَيْءٍ قَدِيرٌ
IRIB English Radio. Please follow our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir. And now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridhvi.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in chapter 3 of the Quran in verse number 33 makes an announcement where he says إن الله اصطفى. Verily God has chosen Adam and then Nuh and then the family of Abraham and then Imran ala al-alamin over the rest of the people in the world. When you look at this verse of the Quran, you come to realize that all human beings have been created by Almighty God, but they are not equal in the eyes of God as far as their status is concerned. You know, when it comes to the prophets of God, the messengers of God, those who represent him in conveying his message, they are at a higher, you know, status than other human beings. I would like to take this opportunity to actually talk about the special status that God has given to Ahlul Bayt, the family of the Prophet. Let me go to the issue of, you know, tathir. Tathir means the issue of, you know, infallibility and purity of the Ahlul Bayt. We know the verse of the Quran where Almighty God declared the Ahlul Bayt, the family of the Prophet, to be pure and to be infallible. But this is not only the issue of spirituality.
You know, that quality that God has given to them, sometimes it is so powerful that you will see even on physical dimension, the rules will change for them. Now let me, you know, give you an example here, relating it with the event about the Ahlul Bayt. For example, you look at space or place. Not every place is equally sacred. You know, let's start with our own musalla, the prayer rug that we use at home. Normally, people fix one area in their room, you know, where they would put their prayer rug, the musalla, to do their daily prayers. In your house, it is your house. Every area, every space there is equal. But once you start praying in that particular spot in your bedroom or your living room, whatever place you are dedicated for your daily prayers, gradually that space acquired the sacredness which is not there in the other parts of your home. And this is not only a symbolic statement. You know, in our religious teachings we are told that when a person is going through the last stages of life, when they are going through agony of death, and if you see they are kind of suffering during that moment, if they want to seek relief, you know, place that person in the place where he was doing the prayers on the musalla or the area of musalla. That will help that individual to go through this, you know, process of death. And so it means that that space itself acquires a sacredness and it has an impact on individuals in that way. That area in your home with the mosque in your neighborhood, which will be more sacred? Of course, the mosque, the masjid in your neighborhood would be more sacred. Then compare that, you know, local masajid in different neighborhoods to the major mosque in the region, which is known as the Jami Masjid, where Friday prayers are held in large congregation. That Jami Masjid becomes more sacred than other neighborhood, you know, mosques. And then on a global level, you know, if you look at the mosque which is there in Mecca, known as Masjid al-Haram, that is considered to be the holiest spot for us on this earth. God is everywhere. You know, technically, I can stand and pray in whatever direction I want. But according to the religious laws, we are told that, yes, God is everywhere. But for your prayers to be valid, you must stand up facing the direction towards the mosque in Mecca. Why? Because that direction acquires its own sanctity and sacredness, because of that place known as Masjid al-Haram in Mecca. And then there are other great mosques around the world. You know, after Masjid al-Haram in Mecca, you look at the mosque in Medina, the Prophet's mosque known as Masjid al-Nabi. That is second in importance as far as sacredness is concerned. Then you have this mosque in Iraq, in Kufa, known as Masjid al-Kufa. That is, you know, after the Masjid al-Nabi. And then finally, among the major masajid around the world, you have this Masjid al-Aqsa, which is in Jerusalem. And so although they are all masjid, places of worship, but not all mosques are equal in status.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the program, To My Brother. For more information, visit our website at iranradio.ir. Until another episode, God bless you and fi amanillah.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Thank you. visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Sound from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Israeli genocide on Gaza continues, along with its frequent attacks on Lebanon, killing more civilians. Meanwhile, the U.S. government has released a document regarding its national security strategy. It says that conflict and violence in the Middle East are subsiding since the ceasefire in Gaza and the U.S.'s attack on Iran. Now, the Trump administration says it will now concentrate on the Western Hemisphere and regional dominance. This is, Trump says, the U.S. will re-implement the Monroe Doctrine. Well, what is going on in Trumpville, and where is it all headed, and what does it mean for Latin America and beyond? Stay with us as we take a look at the latest on the Spotlight. Let's begin with this report.
The Trump administration has released its National Security Strategy for 2025, a document that marks stark differences from earlier strategies issued by the same administration. Let's go over some of the key details.
Western hemispheric dominance, aiming to block what it calls foreign influence in the Americas and shift U.S. military assets toward the Western hemisphere, away from theaters whose relative importance to American national security has declined in recent decades.
The strategy outlines a major shift in U.S. military posture. Observers say the move may be linked to recent U.S. strikes on boats in the Caribbean and the Pacific, and efforts to remove Venezuelan leader Nicolas Maduro by force.
Deterring conflict over Taiwan, unlike earlier strategies that framed China as the top geopolitical rival, the 2025 NSS declares that economic relations are the decisive arena. It underscores the need for allies, particularly India, to increase defense spending to help balance China's growing power in the Indo-Pacific.
The document signals a change in tone. Rather than framing China solely as a geopolitical rival, it emphasizes economic competition as the decisive arena. At the same time, it calls on allies, particularly India, to increase defense spending to help balance China's growing influence in the Indo-Pacific.
Berating Europe, criticizing Europe's migration policies, regulatory focus, and handling of Ukraine conflict, suggesting that the continent must take primary responsibility for its own defense. Switching focus from the West Asia, declaring the region no longer a top priority due to U.S. energy independence and perceived decline in conflict, though still committed to Israel's security. It goes on to argue that the conflict and violence in the region are also subsiding, citing the ceasefire in Gaza and the U.S. attack on Iran in June, which it said significantly degraded Tehran's nuclear program.
It declares the United States energy independent, a claim critics say underscores whether Washington's past involvement in the region was driven by oil. Yet critics point out that Israeli violations of the Gaza ceasefire continue, and Iran remains determined to pursue its peaceful nuclear program. Upon a question about Gaza ceasefire's phase two, Trump told reporters on Thursday that it was going along well. He acknowledged Palestinian deaths as a problem, yet he insisted that West Asia is at peace.
We have peace in the Middle East. People don't realize it. We have tremendous support. 59 countries. There's tremendous support.
Tehran has dismissed the strategy as essentially a security document for Israel. Iran argues that ensuring U.S. access to regional energy resources and guaranteeing Israel's security are the two fundamental issues driving Washington's policy in West Asia. Critics say the new national security strategy only underscores the hypocrisy of the Trump administration, revealing that America's true aim has always been dominating global energy and expanding Israel's power at any cost.
I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Joe Immisberger, writer and political commentator out of Windsor, Canada. And Mike Billington, author and commentator out of Leesburg, out of the U.S. Thank you both for being with me to start this off in Canada. And Joe, well, let's look at some of the issues highlighted in this document. But first, let me ask you, why now? Why is the U.S. saying that the Western Hemisphere will be its priority and the Middle East or West Asia is actually calming?
Well, it's obviously untrue that it's calming. I mean, the genocide in Gaza continues, and the United States has already forced through a resolution, the UN resolution, making itself the colonial governor of Gaza, the Palestinian territories, on behalf of Israel. So it's patently untrue that anything's calming. It's just as long as Palestinians are dying at a level that isn't gaining too much attention in media, and as long as Israelis are not dying at a rate that's noticeable in the media, then they consider it to be a calm. So it's obviously untrue. When you look at documents like this, there's obviously a tremendous amount of dishonesty, and so you always have to distinguish between what's real and what's. But the document, to me, I read through it, and it's a typical U.S. Declaration that it rules, that it's the dictator of the entire Western Hemisphere, and that it's going to be determined to be the dictator, basically. So I think some of this shift from West Asia stuff is just appealing to its base that's sick of the so-called forever wars. I mean, they even use that term forever wars in the document. So there's this need to kind of package their or market their foreign policy to their base as something different that's not going to entangle the United States in wars. But when you're seeking to be the world's supremacist state that tells everybody what to do, including your so-called allies in Europe, then of course you're going to a war.
Okay. Well, Mike, I mean, the document says its goal is America first. Of course, that was Trump's main thing running for presidency. I mean, with that in mind, why do we not see a change in Washington's support for the Israeli regime, even with this new document?
Well, with the Israeli machine, the so-called Zionist lobby, this is a deeply ingrained force within the United States, and Trump does respond to that force. He's part of it, in a sense. So that's not surprising. I would emphasize, however, that the big problem, let me say two things. One is that there are very good aspects to this document. Let me come back to that. The biggest problem with it is this idea that we can take over the Western Hemisphere, and this, of course, is at a moment where the Trump administration, under people like Marco Rubio, we call him Narco Rubio, and Hegseth, are planning to unleash a new war, exactly what Trump swore he would not do during his election campaign and since. But they're about to start a war that would not only be Venezuela, but probably all of Ibero-America. And the real intent here has absolutely nothing to do with drugs, which they claim this is stopping drug trade. But in fact, Venezuela's drug trade is minimal compared to Colombia and other places. But the purpose is to prevent especially China, but also Russia, from having any role whatsoever in South America. This is what terrifies the financial institutions in London and Washington and New York, which is that the ability to control and loot the raw materials in places like South America, but also Africa and elsewhere, because they're turning to the Belt and Road and to the Chinese for real development rather than just financing and then looting. But let me say that there are very, very positive aspects, and you asked what? Well, I'm going to read you a quote from a former CIA analyst, Larry Johnson, who has become a leading spokesman against the war policy in the U.S. By both the Biden and earlier administrations, and unfortunately, as Trump is not completely separate from, despite his very honorable effort to reestablish relations with Russia. And the work that took place over these last week or so with Wycliffe on his talks with Putin and Ushakov represent a very positive and potentially resolutionary state of this. And let me read what Larry Johnson said, because he also makes the same mistake on the question of South America, but he says otherwise that this document, marks a potentially profound shift in U.S. foreign policy under President Donald Reagan's second administration, rejecting global hegemony and ideological crusades in favor of pragmatic, transactional realism focused on protecting core national interests, homeland security, and economic prosperity, and regional dominance of the Western Hemisphere. So he capitulates on this so-called dominance of the Western Hemisphere, which, of course, with Rubio and the Trump administration criminally bombing boats for which they have no evidence there's any crimes being carried out. They just claim these are drug boats, but even if they are, they're not in a position to reach the United States. It's a fake. It's like the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. It's a fake excuse for a policy which is very, very dangerous.
Okay, stay with me. Sorry to interrupt you, Mike, but let me get Joe back in on this conversation. I mean, Joe, you heard what Mike had said about the positive side of this. On the one hand, though, Mike said that, unfortunately, what they're looking at in Latin America and now what they're doing to the fishermen or whatever, this isn't new, though. The policy of the United States, as he also was talking about the WMDs in Iraq, there's always been some type of excuse. But what it seems this document basically also is saying that they're not going to even use the spread of democracy excuse anymore. Because in the document, basically, it's saying that, you know what, people have different ways of running their systems, and basically we're not even worried about that anymore. So there is definitely fundamental change in what is happening. What do you attribute this to, Joe?
Well, the United States has been in relative decline ever since the end of World War II. So to some extent, they have to acknowledge reality. For example, the last, Trump's segment of the Republican Party, sure, they're less hawkish towards Russia because they aren't comfortable with the idea of taking on Russia and China at the same time. That's actually stupid from an imperial point of view. So they can look somewhat more rational in a way when they talk about Russia than the Democrats, who are just gung-ho about confronting Russia and China at the same time. So there's kind of an acknowledgement of reality that you're in relative decline and that you have to pick your fights and prioritize. But that's always the case with an empire. But the problem is that when you're an empire, when you're seeking the kind of even regional dominance that they claim they're seeking, it's a global dominance that they're after. But to even do that, they cannot never let any piece of it break away. I mean, that's why Trump's blatantly interfering in the election in Honduras. I mean, these Honduras, unlike Venezuela, doesn't claim to have the world's largest oil reserves or anything, but they can't help but interfere in small countries like Cuba, even Haiti. They can't let any little piece of the world get away without them being involved and trying to steer it in their direction and undermine its sovereignty. So I think regardless of even if they sincerely wanted to try to pick their battles, but when you're aspiring to be to dominate the world, then you're going to end up getting intervening everywhere because you just can't afford to let anything slip out of your grasp. So I think this is just the difference in the way that different factions of the U.S. ruling elite, the way they market themselves. Trump doesn't want to. His base doesn't like things like democracy and pretending that they're going to overthrow Maduro out of some benevolent or altruistic desire to free Venezuelans. They prefer to concoct an excuse that we're defending ourselves. So it's a difference in marketing, but the overall global imperial strategy is the same.
All right. Well, Mike, now the U.S. claims that the situation is calming in the Middle East or Western Asia, but in reality, with Washington's continued support of the Zionist regime, The genocide has not ended in Gaza, and the regime continues to kill people in the West Bank and in Lebanon. The U.S. lights the flame and then says it has stepped out of the fire. I mean, what are your thoughts overall about this? Is this just the U.S. knowing that it has failed in West Asia and is trying to find an escape, or how do you see it?
I think both what you and your friend from Canada said is giving in to an extremely simplistic view of the world situation as a whole right now. And I don't disagree with what you're saying and what both of you are saying about what's happening in the Middle East and in South America. But the crucial thing taking place in the world right now is that the potential of a global nuclear war between the U.S. and Russia, or Russia and China, is being given an alternative approach by what Trump is doing in the total opposite approach of what we've had in previous governments, to try to bring about some cooperation with Russia, and the Russians are very open to this. And he's now going to go meet with Xi Jinping in China. So the potential of having a similar positive relationship with China is also on the table. And nothing can be more important in a world facing economic disintegration and the potential of nuclear war than these three major powers coming together. If we can bring about a sane approach in the U.S. to working with the BRICS countries, working with Russia and with China and the other Global South countries, this would be a potential dramatic shift in history. The ending of the colonial era and the unleashing of what could and must be what the LaRouche movement has always fought for, a new architecture based on security and development for every country on Earth. Now, obviously, that doesn't cohere with launching a new insane war in South America, or the continuation of the battle in Gaza and in the Palestinian area.
Okay, let me just jump in here, because isn't that where the problem lies? Understand what you're saying, Mike, as far as perhaps intention in some cases with the U.S. government. But Joe, when we look at the reality that's happening, at the end of the day, the United States is basically the military-industrial complex runs the show, and are they ready to actually give up this hegemonic perspective in creating chaos in order to work together? Yes, we all know that it's better to work together, but that has never been the intent of imperialist entities. I mean, how do you see it?
Well, first of all, the domination of the Western Hemisphere, that makes sense. If you want to confront China and Russia down the road more effectively, you want to secure greater control of the countries closer to you. So what I see this is to some extent, some maneuvering to maybe try to get Russia and China basically to sell out South America, Central and South America, and just say, okay, this is our turf. We'll stay out of it, and we'll give you some concessions on other things. So I see that. I see that ultimately is a very sinister maneuver that I don't think is going to prevent the United States from confronting Russia and China, because the very nature of the United States, and you can see it all over this document, is to become the global, become what even more of what it already is, a global empire, a bully that just tells everybody else, including even the Europeans. I mean, it's actually kind of comical in portions of this document where they're demanding, basically shaking down the Europeans for more, and the Canadians for increased military spending. That means, you know, increased money for the U.S. Contractors and stuff. It's just a shakedown. So I think that's in the nature of what the imperial power is. And I think the shift towards the Western Hemisphere is just going to, if anything, just bring up them positioning for themselves for confrontation, more direct confrontation with China and Russia down the road.
Hmm. Well, Mike, what does it mean in your perspective when Washington says it basically wants to reenact the Monroe Doctrine? First of all, what does it mean for Latin America itself? And also, what does it mean for the Europeans? Because there seems to be a definitely clash there. From the perspective of the Trump administration, towards the Europeans?
Well, the Europeans are totally freaked out by this national security strategy, precisely because of what I said before, which is that this strategy very explicitly says Europe is destroying itself. It's he doesn't use the word insane, but he's actually demonstrating a insanity in the leadership of the so-called coalition of the willing in Europe, who are hell-bent on continuing the war with Russia, and they even stupidly claim that they could fight the war themselves without the U.S. military backing, and could, in fact, start a war with Russia, which would be lead rapidly to global nuclear war, and is a level of insanity which has to be identified. So that's the Europeans. In terms of the Monroe Doctrine, I think it's very important to acknowledge that the original Monroe Doctrine was an anti-colonial, anti-imperial policy. It was not to justify U.S. colonial policy in South America. It was to prevent the then colonial powers in Europe from coming into South America. That, unfortunately, was reversed by what was called the Roosevelt Corollary, referring to Teddy Roosevelt, not FDR, who basically said that, in fact, the U.S. will be militarily involved South America, and subsequently, as we know, they were. But the original was not that intention. The founding fathers of the United States were not only committed to developing America as a strong industrial democratic power, but were absolutely committed to ending colonial power globally. And they were not able to do that because of changes that took place in the United States, and then the ultimate emergence of outright fascism in places in Europe and in Asia. So this is a crisis, but the reality of what's taking place with this national security strategy is hopefully, and this is the way our organization and our associates should be treating this. We can act to prevent the insanity of a new war in South America. We can stop that. It hasn't happened yet. And we can do that by emphasizing the tremendous positive potential of a U.S.-Russia-Chinese cooperation around development. What should they cooperate on? They should cooperate on developing the Arctic, on developing Africa, on developing Ibero-America. Look what's happened in South America so far. China built the biggest port on the entire Pacific coast, the Chancay port in Peru. And they're talking to Brazil and others about building a bioceanic railroad between the Pacific and the Atlantic from the Chancay port in Peru up to the Atlantic coast in Brazil. Now, these are the kind of policies that the U.S., with sane leadership, would jump at. It would be tremendous to rebuild the U.S. industrial infrastructure, which is in a state of collapse, not quite as bad as that of Europe. But it's heading in that direction with a financial bubble, with the IT bubble, and with the cryptocurrency bubbles, which are now ready to blow apart, bringing about a bigger crisis than the 2008 breakdown. Okay. So, you know, these are issues that should be on our table rather than trying to further exemplify that the U.S. cannot be changed and that it's going to go into another round of wars.
What about that, Joe? I mean, I think probably all of us would agree here that that should be on the agenda of the United States, countries working together. I mean, it really works. But that just has not been what we have seen from the United States. And now Trump is criticizing, actually, the Europeans and even their crackdown on free speech and political opposition, while at the same time there is crackdown on free speech inside of the United States. So there just seems to be a lot of contradictions in general. I mean, your take on that part of it.
Yeah, well, when people like Trump talk about free speech, they talk about freedom for Nazis to incite violence against minorities. That's what matters to them. They want you to be able to go out on cameras and say that the immigrants are destroying our country, basically to incite violence against ethnic minorities. They're not going to stick up for the Palestine Action, for example. People are getting arrested in the UK and being called terrorists because they're opposed to genocide in Gaza. They're never going to stick up for that. That's not free speech that they care, give a damn about. They just care about the fascists being able to incite against ethnic minorities. So that's all this nonsense about free speech that he mentions it is in the document. And yeah, I noticed that. The United States, from its founding fathers, has been a genocidal state. I mean, that's even, its foundation was based on genociding. It's writing in the Declaration of Independence that the foreign powers were inciting the original inhabitants, the natives of the United States, against them. So it's always been genocidal. It's from day one. I reject this idea that the founding fathers were some noble figures. I mean, that's just a complete reversal of the truth. So in terms of United States trying to get China and Russia to cooperate, I think this is something dangerous because we've ever seen what kind of cooperation they could get. For example, the China and Russia both abstained on what was basically a genocidal resolution that allowed the United States and Israel to become the with the UN endorsement, become the colonial rulers of Gaza. I mean, and that's just outrageous. So that's the kind of the rest of the world should be opposed to that. And they're going to be cooperating with the United States to help them suppress countries all over the world, and that's something.
All right, let me give Mike 30 seconds. Mike, go ahead. Last comments.
Well, again, you know, these simplistic views which try to create a single view of the direction of what's taking place, rather than thinking like a creative human being about what should we push forward as the necessary positive solution. And again, I mean, we have the potential for a U.S.-Russia-China cooperation, joining the BRICS. Why not have everyone recognize that this is a real potential and that Trump and some of the better people around him, rather than the Rubios and the Hegseths, recognize that.
All right. So sorry, I'm out of time. I'm sorry, I'm out of time. Appreciate both of you being with me, Joe Imsberger out of Canada, Mike Billington out of the U.S. And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashmi. Goodbye.
Shines above. You're the reason I never give up. You're the one I try for. Live my life for. Give up all I have. You're the melody, you're the key, all the inspiration I need. And when times get tough, I know you'll stand by me. You are the love I need, the one who is God. And you know my destiny, for you are the light, and you are my life. Oh, 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 oh. I felt from the start.
and you know my destiny, for you are the light, and you are my life.
Good day to all of our listeners. This is Iran Radio, and I'm your presenter for the next hour. We start off this hour's programs with our varied radio productions feature. Then it's time for Around the World with Reporters. Listen to fascinating reports from all over the globe as reporters tell us what is happening in their corner of the world. Our radio productions feature will again follow after this. Stay with us for this hour.
It doesn't matter how old you are, games are an integral part of human life. Games are one of the most important adventures in our lives because of our desire for excitement and challenge. Many believe that games play an important role in children's understanding of life. But do all games have this advantage? There are more than 100,000 board games in